Your Honor, if I may
Please speak up.
reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Okay.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kimberly Shutt, registration number 25947, appearing here today on behalf of the appellant, Carrie Mullett, who is also the defendant below. As the court knows, this is a personal injury action which arose out of an auto accident that happened in Fort Collins in December of 2006. The case was tried to a jury in February of last year and resulted in a verdict in favor of the plaintiff, Aaron McCambridge. We are asking the court to reverse that judgment based on two grounds. One, that the jury's verdict was inconsistent in that it found that Mr. McCambridge was comparatively negligent, or was negligent, but then assigned him 0% negligence when it was resolving the relative fault of the parties. The second grounds is to find that the trial judge should have entered a judgment notwithstanding the verdict on the comparative negligence defense, and then remand or retried the matter as to the relative fault of the parties. Since this case turns very much on the specific facts of the accident, I'd like to review those briefly. It's undisputed that on December 29th, 2006, it was snowy. It had snowed several inches the night before, such that the roads were icy and slushy. That my client, Ms. Mullett, was traveling southbound on Highway 287, heading towards Loveland, and was doing so about 20 miles below the posted speed limit because of the road conditions. That as she approached the intersection with Trilby Road, which was an east-west street controlled by a traffic signal, and she was about two car lengths away, she suddenly realized that she could not actually tell which light was illuminated because the traffic signal was caked with ice and snow. She said she had 3 seconds, 4 seconds tops, 1, 2, 3, 4, to decide what to do under the circumstances.
Counsel, excuse me.
Yes.
It was not undisputed, or was it undisputed, that the traffic light was obstructed?
The only testimony that came, my client testified that it was indeed caked with ice and snow. Mr. McCambridge could not testify as to whether the light was obstructed. He acknowledged that Ms. Mullett at the scene of the accident told him she couldn't tell which light was illuminated. And the police officer could only testify regarding the accident from his report. And because he had not indicated in his report whether the lights were caked with ice and snow, he assumed that he had looked and that they were not. So I believe that the evidence was in fact undisputed that they were caked with ice and snow. In any event, she made the split second decision because traffic was stopped on Trilby Road that she had the green light and decided in that split second to proceed through the intersection. Meanwhile, Mr. McCambridge was stopped on eastbound Trilby Road waiting to turn left onto Highway 287. The green arrow came on, and it's undisputed that he proceeded into the intersection without looking either left or right before doing so.
Now, did he testify that he did not look, or did he testify that he could not recall whether he looked?
Your Honor, I believe if you look at the testimony on cross-examination found at page 998 of the record, that he was asked several times regarding whether he looked, and at one point said, he was asked, when I noticed the left turn arrow, I proceeded into the intersection. Yes. And then Mr. Campbell inquired, without looking either to your left or to your right, and he replied, as I recall. I believe if you take that testimony that there's no way to construe it other than an admission that he failed to look either left or right. He proceeded into the intersection. Ms. Mullett saw him pull out into the intersection, and unfortunately, in the short time that she had to react, was not able. She attempted to swerve, was not able to avoid the accident, and a collision occurred, resulting in the lawsuit which we have before us today. At the trial, it was Ms. Mullett's contention that she was faced with a sudden emergency. Or alternatively, if the jury found that she was negligent, that Mr. McCambridge must also bear some percentage of negligence for the accident for failing to look before entering the intersection.
You're not contesting the jury's determination, apparent determination, that your client was not excused by a sudden emergency, are you?
We have not raised that issue on appeal, Your Honor. In resolving these issues, the jury specifically found that Ms. Mullett was negligent, but it also found that Mr. McCambridge was negligent. Yet, it went on to then, in resolving the comparative fault between the parties, assign him 0% negligence and assign my client 100% of the negligence.
But, excuse me, counsel, before reaching that question, didn't the jury determine that the plaintiff's negligence did not cause any of his injuries or damages?
It did answer yes to that question, and it's our position here that both of those findings are inconsistent, given the jury's finding in this discrete accident event, which all happened in a matter of seconds, that Mr. McCambridge was negligent. We submit that it's irreconcilable for them to have found him negligent, yet not a cause of his own injuries, and 0% negligent.
Well, counsel, certainly you would agree the law is that a person can be found negligent and not have caused damages. There's case law to that effect, right?
There is, but in
Why doesn't that case law apply in this case then?
Because there are certainly circumstances where a party can be found negligent, but it's in some different sequence of events. The example we gave in our brief was, say, in a rear-end collision where the plaintiff driver is texting while he's at a stoplight, and then he's rear-ended behind from the defendant. Certainly texting while driving is an act of negligence, yet it's completely unrelated to the sequence of events leading to that collision. Whereas here, it's our position that Mr. McCambridge, having pulled into the intersection without looking, was part of that same discrete sequence of events causing the collision. So that if Ms. Mullett is negligent for that collision, so too must Mr. McCambridge be as well.
So Mr. McCambridge, you say he failed to look to his, I gather in this case, to his left.
Correct.
Looking to the right wouldn't have mattered.
Right.
You say it happened within a split second. So even if he had looked to his left as he pulled into the intersection, which may have been a reasonable thing to do, the accident would have happened anyway because your client couldn't have stopped. Isn't that a possible scenario that the jury found?
It's possible, but what we're dealing here is with probabilities. If the jury found him negligent for failing to have looked, based upon the evidence in the record, he should have looked before entering the intersection. He was required under the law and the statutes in effect at the time that he must cautiously enter the intersection even if he has the right of way. And so it's our position that given the sequence of the events in this collision, that if he was negligent for failing to have looked, there's no reasonable way to construe that other than as a cause of the accident and bearing some percentage of fault for the accident event. And I think you have, the bottom line here is how far the court can go in construing the facts and trying to find some theory of liability that would support the jury's verdict here. My opponent has suggested that you can reconcile it by saying, well, the jury must have found him negligent for having paused. He didn't realize right away that he had a green arrow, so it took a few minutes before he entered the intersection and then the accident occurred. With all due respect, we believe that that view of the facts is illogical. If anything, his having paused before entering the intersection was the prudent thing to do. That was our whole point. He should have paused and looked before entering the intersection, particularly given the conditions which existed that day. If we had argued that as a defense at trial, that he was negligent for having paused before entering the intersection, the jury would have thought we were crazy, and Mr. McCambridge's attorney would have likely been hopping up and down, arguing that we had a frivolous and groundless defense, and asking for an award of attorney's fees. I think if you look at Justice Quinn's opinion, dissenting opinion in the City of Aurora versus Loveless case, that it's a voice of reason as to how to approach these cases, that you have to look at the facts in the record, you have to look at the jury instructions, you have to look at the verdict forms that are given to the jury, and find some logical basis based upon how the case was presented to the jury to support the jury's verdict. And we submit that you can't do that here, given that the only basis, the only theory that was asserted to the jury was that Mr. McCambridge was negligent for having failed to cautiously enter the intersection and look left or right before proceeding into it.
Before you use up your time, let me turn to your second issue here.
Yes.
You argue that the jury's answer to question number 7 on the special verdict form, where they allocate 0%, is also inconsistent and erroneous. Did you notice that the special verdict form does not comply with the CJI prescribed form because the instruction is left out? The instruction should say, if you answer yes to all of questions 1 through 5, then answer 7. But the jury didn't answer yes to question 5, and therefore they should not have answered question 7.
Your Honor, I did not note that discrepancy from the pattern form, and so I would suggest that that's yet another basis for finding that there was some error in how the jury was instructed and how
they... didn't object to the special verdict form, did you?
I don't believe we did. I believe all of the instructions and verdict forms were stipulated at trial, Your Honor.
What I'm suggesting is that would be an explanation of how the jury ended up... One of the possibilities, they shouldn't have answered 7 at all, so it may be that that answer is irrelevant. It's a surplusage.
Regardless of that issue, I would point out that in instruction 26 and 27, the instructions on negligence per se, the jury was specifically instructed that they could only find negligence on the part of either party for having violated the statute if they also found that it was a cause of the accident. And yet the jury here did in fact find Mr. McCambridge was negligent. The only theory of negligence presented to them was his failure to cautiously enter the intersection on a green turn arrow and failing to look either left or right. And so we submit that that's part of the inconsistency here, is they did not follow the directions which were given to them. With regard to our second issue, the judgment notwithstanding the verdict, we submit regardless of how the court resolves the inconsistencies in the verdict, that pursuant to its de novo review on this particular issue, we can look at the facts in the record, and it can look at the relevant law, which requires that Mr. McCambridge enter an intersection on a green light in a cautious manner and look before proceeding into the intersection, that it can find that he was negligent as a matter of law and bears some responsibility for this accident, and remand the matter back for determination as to the relative fault between the parties.
You've got 30 seconds left before you wanted to break. You cited the dissenting opinion of Justice Quinn.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be unusual for us to rely on a dissent in this, as a court of appeals? Wouldn't it be unusual for us to rely on the dissent of the Supreme Court in deciding a case?
It is unusual, and I acknowledge that. But I think also, if you look at the majority of the opinion, particularly compared with the court of appeals opinion in that case and Justice Quinn's dissenting opinion, that I believe that case was very much driven by the very unique and unfortunate facts of that case, which involved a civil suit against a police officer for having shot and killed, for lack of a better word, a deranged gunman who was coming at him, shooting him. I think under any circumstances, understandably, the court would be hard-pressed to try to reconcile the jury's verdict under those circumstances. That case was obviously decided 30 years ago by a different court on those unique grounds, and I would submit that Justice Quinn's dissenting opinion is a better rule of thumb for approaching these cases and more consistent with the overall body of law of how to review a jury's verdict under these circumstances.
Thank you.
Thank you. I would reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Good. You have 1 minute, 12 seconds. We'll hear now from the appellee.
May it please the court, I'm Walter Sargent. I represent the plaintiff, Aaron McCambridge.
I'm sure to talk loud into the mic, and you can be right into it.
Much better. I'm Walter Sargent. I represent the plaintiff, Aaron McCambridge. Defendant Kerry Mollett negligently drove through a red light at 30 to 35 miles per hour and crashed into the driver's side of McCambridge's car. She says the jury should have found that McCambridge, his own negligence, was a cause of his injuries, and she makes several arguments. First, she says it was inconsistent for the jury to find that McCambridge was negligent without also finding that his negligence was a cause of his injuries. But as our Supreme Court held in City of Aurora versus Lovelace, a special verdict of negligence without causation is not inconsistent on its face. Now, Mullett says this case is different. She says the jury's finding of McCambridge's negligence must have been based on his alleged failure to look right or left before entering the intersection. She says his negligence in failing to look right or left was part of what she describes as a single sequence of events that led up to the injury, to the collision. So the jury was required to find that the negligence was a cause of the injuries.
Counsel, let me stop you there. Did you hear my question to her when I asked her if he said, no, he did not stop, or he did not recall whether, excuse me, no, he did not look both ways, or he did not recall looking both ways? And she read something from the transcript that seemed to indicate that he said that he agreed that as what he said was, as I recall, it didn't look. Do you agree with that? Was there anything conflicting to that?
I don't agree with counsel's characterization of what was said. This is on page 998 of the record. On the cross-examination, the attorney says, and you didn't look either left or right when you waited at the intersection behind the red light, did you? He says, not that I recall. And again, without looking either to your left or your right, as I recall. And in between noticing the red light and being stopped and then noticing the left turn green arrow, in other words, in those few seconds before you headed into the intersection, you didn't look either left or right, not that I recall. Let's keep in mind, there was a lot that he didn't recall at the time of the accident. He was unconscious part of the time. And in fact, he didn't remember what happened after he saw the grill of the car about to drive into him. And when he heard somebody saying, are you all right? Are you all right?
But if he didn't recall, then there is no evidence to the contrary, correct?
There's no evidence either way. I mean, presumably.
Well, there is. Excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, presumably the jury could make some judgment about whether it's likely that he would have looked to his right. But this is the only testimony in that regard, yes.
Okay.
And by the way, I also want to clarify the point that was raised about whether there was snow in the, I believe you asked that, Judge Miller. Whether the police officer had observed snow or whether he'd looked. On page 1211 of the record, the police officer is asked, now again, I want to be very specific. Do you recall looking at the traffic control devices? Answer, yes, sir. Do you recall seeing any snow in those traffic control devices? No, sir. Now, Mullett argues that there can be no negligence without causation, and she's wrong for a couple of reasons. First, we can't assume that the jury's finding of McCambridge's negligence was based on his alleged failure to look right or left. And that's true even if Mullett's only basis for arguing comparative negligence was this alleged failure to look right or left. As the Supreme Court held in Lovelace, the majority, not the dissent, we can't assume that the jury's finding of negligence was based on the same conduct that the opposing party's allegation of negligence was based on, because that would be an impermissible assumption about the jury's thought process. If the record supports another basis for the jury's finding of negligence that would be consistent with the jury's finding of no causation, then there's no inconsistency. Well, here, although counsel now says, well, this would be a frivolous argument, in her reply in support of her motion for new trial, Mullett conceded that, and I'll actually quote it, if this were a case in which defendant had rear-ended the plaintiff, such failure on plaintiff's part to immediately notice that his left turn arrow was green, thereby causing him to hesitate in pulling forward, could be competent evidence from which the jury could have logically found the plaintiff to be negligent. And she also conceded that any such hesitation probably, quote, saved him from, quote, a more direct broadside impact. On that basis alone, the record is adequate to support the jury's finding that McCambridge's negligence did not cause his injuries.
Counsel, I think Ms. Schutt argued that theory of negligence was not presented during the trial, either in closing argument or otherwise. Do you agree with that?
I think that's probably accurate, Your Honor.
Does that matter?
I don't think so. Not under, again, the majority opinion as opposed to the dissenting opinion in Loveless. And obviously, this court is required to follow the majority opinion. But aside from...
Then how do you explain, or how would you answer her argument that under instruction number 27, which was the per se negligence, I guess it's per se negligence, or whatever a person does on facing a green arrow signal, the jury was told that they could find negligence under that statute, but only if they find that negligence was a cause of the claimed damages. Jury finding negligence under, must we conclude that the jury's negligent finding with respect to plaintiff was based on instruction number 27, as I think she suggests?
I heard that. I'm not sure that I quite understood the comment.
By me or by her?
I'm sorry?
By me or by her?
No, by her. I wasn't sure that I understood what she was saying.
Well, after quoting the statute,
the
instruction quotes the statute, which says, and I'll just paraphrase it, you may cautiously enter the intersection, etc. I assume that she's suggesting that was the basis of the jury's finding of negligence. Plaintiff failed to cautiously enter the intersection, which is what she's suggesting. The instruction then has a sentence at the end which says, if you find such, and then it says a violation of the statute constitutes negligence. If you find such a violation, you may only consider it if you also find that it was a cause of the claimed damages. So she's suggesting that they could not have found that he was negligent unless it was also a cause of the claimed damages if it was this statute that he violated.
I guess when your qualifier at the end there, if the jury found that this was the basis for the finding of negligence, of course we don't know that. But also, I think when the instruction says you may only consider it, it means only consider it for purposes of allocating fault. Obviously, we can't say that the jury can't consider negligence unless it finds fault and essentially preclude it from first finding fault. I'm a little confused by her.
To the other question I asked. Did you notice that the special verdict form leaves out that carrying sentence, which says, in effect, says don't answer question 7 unless you've said yes to all 5, and the jury, it was left out of the instruction?
I don't recall if I noticed that it was different from the standard instructions. I think my view is that by answering 100% attributable to Mullett, the jury was simply emphasizing the point that it had made earlier that McCambridge, his negligence was not a cause. I think also, even if we assume that the jury's finding of McCambridge's negligence was based solely on his alleged failure to look left or right, the jury wasn't required to find that his negligence was a cause of his injuries. Without objection, the jury was properly instructed that the word cause, as used in these instructions, is a cause without which the claimed injury would not have happened. In other words, it was a but-for cause. The jury was also instructed, again, without objection, that a person has the right to believe that others will obey applicable laws and regulations unless there are reasonable grounds to believe otherwise. That's jury instruction 36. Well, applying those instructions, the jury could reasonably have found that McCambridge, if he had looked to his left on this, as counsel has repeatedly described, this snowy day, this overcast morning, he would have seen, at most, a Jeep Cherokee off at the distance, approaching the intersection at about 25 miles per hour, lower than the posted speed limit. He would have reasonably believed that the Jeep was going down to He was going to slow further and actually stop at the red light. He would have reasonably turned his attention to the oncoming traffic. He would have reasonably proceeded into the intersection, and he still would have been hit. Because even if you take reasonable care You can still get injured by someone who is negligently driving through a red light at 30 to 35 miles per hour.
That's true, and that would explain a lot, except the jury found him negligent. Had he acted reasonably like you just outlined, the jury shouldn't have found him negligent, right? Yet they found him negligent.
Well,
how do we explain that?
They could have found, as I said, I mean, they could have found that he didn't look right. That wouldn't make any difference. They could have found that he didn't look left, but even if he had looked left, he still would have proceeded into the intersection. She still would have hit him. They could have found he was negligent because he hesitated a bit. He didn't realize that he could go immediately into the intersection. As counsel admitted in the trial court, that probably saved him from more extensive injuries. There are all kinds of reasons the jury could have found him negligent, but we are bound by its finding that his negligence, whatever it was, did not cause his injuries.
Counsel, this your second scenario, that he could have looked left, but assumed that the car was going to slow down or something. Given that within a second or two later, he was hit by the car was obviously very close to the intersection when he would have looked left. And given that it was snowing, isn't that another reason why he should have been looking and should have been thinking that it's possible somebody might not slam on their brakes in time to prevent an accident?
Your Honor, I don't know how most people would look around. It seems to me it's reasonable to look right, look left, then look to the oncoming traffic, which after all does have the right of way. And you'd be focused more on traffic that actually has the right of way than somebody who may be coming barreling down and crashing into you, because you normally expect people to stop at red lights.
Now, but if you'd looked left, he may have known that the person was not going to stop for a red light.
He may have. And we don't know that. The jury could reasonably, properly conclude that it wouldn't have made a difference.
So, counsel, in a comparative negligence setting, is there an obligation for a driver to look both ways before going across?
There was no jury instruction to that effect. There was no expert witness testimony to that effect. The only jury instruction regarding that was that he was required to, under the statute, he was required to enter the intersection cautiously. And it was up to the jury to decide what was sufficiently cautious to meet his duty of care. I'll just quickly proceed to a couple of additional points. Counsel says that it was also negligent. It was also inconsistent for the jury to find that McCambridge was negligent without also assigning a certain percentage of negligence to him. But of course, the jury wasn't required to assign any percentage to McCambridge. The jury was instructed to determine each party's percentage of the combined negligence of the defendant and the plaintiff that caused the plaintiff's injuries. Having determined that McCambridge's injuries, that his negligence did not cause his injuries, the jury properly determined that 100% was attributable to Mullen.
You shouldn't have answered that question anyway, as I read this form.
It's not clear to me based on these instructions. Maybe in the standard stock instructions would say otherwise. It's not clear to me that the instructions ever said the jury was not permitted to answer that question. But
7 says it.
I'm sorry?
An instruction, one of the instructions.
Oh, because it says not should not be considered?
Yeah, 33 it says don't answer number 7 unless you answered yes to all the ones above. But that sentence was left off the special verdict form. Just an omission, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, there was no objection to it. And again, it seems to me the jury saying 100% is simply emphasizing its earlier point. Finally, regarding the motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict, there are three reasons that the trial court properly rejected that. First, as we've discussed, McCambridge did not unequivocally testify he didn't look left. Second, even if he had, the jury wasn't required to find that it was negligent under these circumstances. And finally, and most importantly, really, even if we assumed that McCambridge negligently failed to look left, it was for the jury, not for the court, to determine whether his negligence was a cause of his injuries. So the motion for judgment notwithstanding the verdict was correctly denied. The judgment should be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel. And rebuttal, You have 1 minute and 12 seconds remaining.
Your Honors, I think it's important to recall here that the jury was specifically instructed that it could not base its findings on speculation, that any of its findings must indeed be based on probabilities, not possibilities. Yet, in trying to come up with these other theories that would support the jury's verdict, other than what was argued at trial, it would seem that we, are on review, are doing just that. I think the court has to look at this in the context of the case as it was presented to the jury. The only theory of liability asserted to the jury was Mr. McCambridge's failure to look left or right or enter cautiously into the intersection prior to proceeding. And as Justice Miller pointed out, that failure occurred just moments before the collision. It was not, as my opponent suggested, where Mr. Mullett or Ms. Mullett's car was off in the distance and slowing down. It's those crucial seconds leading up to the collision that we're talking about. And that's specifically why, here in this particular case, we believe the jury's finding of negligence, but not causation, is inconsistent. I agree that on its face, there's other cases where the jury can make a finding that a party is negligent, but not a cause of his own injuries and damages, but not given the discrete accident event which happened here.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is up. I want to thank both counsel for their excellent arguments today. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.